This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour.
So on International Women's Day, we often think about inspirational women. And the women who are often in the spotlight are women of note, you know, women who have created fundamental change and empowerment. They're often well-known, now famous, or household names. Now, that's important. It's necessary. And we want the number of those women to grow. But when you think about the women who have inspired or empowered you personally, it's often more grassroots. It might be your mum or your grandmother, maybe an auntie. Women who have worked so hard their entire lives and maybe didn't get a lot of recognition. We think about the women who have shaped us individually, women who have shaped our community. And quite often, they're women who wouldn't consider themselves to have achieved anything significant. But how wrong they are. These are the women who are the backbones and the foundation of courage and strength. And today we want to focus on the importance of women who are very rarely given the spotlight. Today we want to share the stories of migrant women, all throughout history and through to today. The role of migrant women in our communities, in our lives, and how they've shaped families and women who follow in their footsteps. There's a lovely quote from one of our guests who you're going to hear from today. And it says, if you raise up one migrant woman in terms of economic self-sufficiency, then you will raise a village. So let's raise that village today. Do you know the story of your mum, your grandmother, maybe your neighbour? What was their migration experience like? And what influence have they had on you?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt. And on this International Women's Day, I have an incredible panel of women sitting before me. Professor Joy DeMussy, AM. She's the Dean of Arts, Director and Institute for Humanities and Social Sciences at the Australian Catholic University. Joy, welcome.
Thanks, Rochelle.
And Viv Nguyen. She's the chairperson of fourth year running of the Victorian Multicultural Commission. Viv, a warm welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
And we have Anne Nguyen Austin as well, refugee and migrant advocate and researcher for Melbourne Museum and ACU. Anne, a warm welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Joy, let's start with you. A lot of your work as a historian focuses on women, in particular migrant women at certain periods, and how that has impacted us as a community and almost how we need to look back at their role now and how it's shaped us. Are migrant women, are they kind of forgotten when it comes to their importance and the world that we live in now today as a result of their story and their hard work and courage?
Absolutely, Rochelle. I think we need many more stories told. We need many more histories written of the pivotal and central role migrant women have played in defining and shaping this country, especially after the Second World War, when, of course, we know there was that mass migration from Europe and then successive waves of migrations, the 70s, the Vietnamese communities, and then the South Sudanese and Sudanese communities more recently. They get lost. They get lost in the narrative of politics and higher politics, as it were, policy, you know, what policies governments applied. But the actual stories are really valuable in terms of placing and positioning migrant women at the heart and centre of how this country was transformed with migration.
So why are they lost, do you think? I mean, why is that value? I mean, let's bring it back, actually. What is the value that we're talking about that is lost?
Well, the value that is lost is, I mean, manyfold. First of all, it's the role that women have played, central role they have played in redefining Australian identity, redefining communities, redefining the whole notion of what it is to be a migrant in this country. And that's often done through the family, and the domestic sphere. And the domestic sphere, even to this day, is undervalued in terms of the labour that we know that goes into unpaid work in the domestic realm. Statistics consistently demonstrate women still carry the burden overwhelmingly of domestic labour, and that is a devalued sphere. Migrant women often held two jobs, the domestic job and a paid job outside the family. So for many generations of migrant women, it's been a matter of managing several jobs, keeping the domestic front going, as well as contributing the financial to the financial economy. There's that story that needs to be unpacked and told more thoroughly. The other story is the, and I think you touched on it, Rochelle, in your opening remarks, I mean, the sheer courage of leaving your country, your networks, your relatives, your domestic support systems, and coming to a country where none of that existed, or you had to start and rebuild that from scratch. Women were responsible often for doing that. It wasn't the men, or hasn't often been the men who've created those domestic networks, set up those networks. It's the women, and again, it's women's labour that goes into that over decades. So that story of resilience and courage, I think, still needs to be highlighted in understanding the challenges that they face.
I wonder how much has actually changed. Viv, I'm thinking about some women directly in my family. I've got in-laws who are Macedonian, and within that family there would be older women who migrated. I didn't know a lot about their stories, but partially a lot of that was because they had never even been given the opportunity to learn English, or maybe didn't want to learn English. It would keep them quite isolated within their home, with what they could do, the opportunities they had for everything from being able to work to driving a car. How much of it has changed in terms of a woman's role and the opportunities she is given when she comes to Australia?
Yeah. As I listen to Professor Joy, I think there is, we are making progress, some, but it's often, from where I see it, especially when you add to the element of refugee women and the trauma that they bring with them, some of the barriers are quite significant. So in some way, we make progress with one community, for example, in my case, the Vietnamese, and then we have another wave of migration and refugees coming through. And sadly, the lessons that we've learned from the previous wave of migration hasn't actually been embedded into the structure. So
how do you do that? How do you embed it into the structure? And whose responsibility is that?
A large part of it is about the recognition of the contribution the women can bring and making space for them to be part of the decision-making table. That's the representation, which is one of the key remits of the Victorian Multicultural Commission, fosters and wants to be able to bring more voices to the table, because it's really important for the structure to reflect the needs and the demand. We see that in business all the time. But when it comes to our society, when it comes to representation in policies and in decision-making, the voices of migrant and refugee women is continually lacking. One step forward, two steps back.
This text: my mum is an immigrant who is now 85. She's still a caregiver. Every day she'll visit people in hospital or palliative care, read to them, maybe just hold their hand. She is a constant source of wisdom and advice still today. Not all superheroes wear capes. Some are just wizened old ladies who always know how to say the right thing. Anne, I was really drawn to the quote of yours that talks about empowerment and empowerment of women pretty much through finances as well. That idea of, if you give self-sufficiency, if you give economic self-sufficiency to a woman, then you will raise a village. Mm. What do you mean by that?
So I can give you an example. I'm a refugee child and a migrant to Australia. I've been here 10 years. So my grandmother, after the Vietnam War, moved to a village called Versailles, and it's a black, predominantly poor community. She put a yoke on her back and she sold ham, Vietnamese ham, at the church. And with that, she raised 8 children, and then she created a factory. Oh. And that ham was shipped out throughout all of America. And that gave the seed money for 8 children to build their own businesses. And that is the heritage of my grandmother. Now, when my mother
I've had a complete emotional reaction to that.
That's incredible.
Yeah. My mother raised four children, I myself included. She learned to be an upholsterer. And my father was the emotional backbone of our family. He gave her a lot of strength, and he took care of the women in his life so that they could do the caretaking and the economic. So I come from a long line and history of Vietnamese women who actually build the roads, make the money, while some men sit at the coffee smoke, you know, in the circles. And, you know, this is happens across cultures, that women are doing the work. And we just had the pay gap report come out. You know, they need to be freed up from these situations in order to take on larger paying positions.
Every time I eat ham, I will think of you and your family. Absolutely, Viv.
It's great that, you know, Anne's story has the bloke or the father or the man doing the supporting. For some cultures, that's not necessarily the predominant element. And so the woman ends up doing far more, and not all the time. In fact, in many cases, not recognized. And that is an element that I believe in our society, we need to elevate that a lot more.
With you in the studio this morning, Professor Joy DeMoussy, AM Dean of Arts, Director of the Institute for Humanities and Social Services at the Australian Catholic University. Viv Nguyen is the chairperson of the Victoria Multicultural Commission. And Anne Nguyen Austin, a refugee and migrant advocate and researcher for the Melbourne Museum and ACU. Before we have a chat to Alan, who's called in from Shepparton, there's a direct message for you here, Joy. And it says, Joy DeMoussy was my mentor at Melbourne University while I wrote my history and thesis on recreating the history of my mother, who died when I was a young child. Through the memories of other, Joy gave me the strength to believe in myself and my own experience of my mother, and to face my history, which saw me grow up with one of the most traumatized yet strong and challenging women I've ever met. My mother's mother, my grandmother, a child survivor of the Holocaust, Joy, thank you. Thank you for all that you gave to me, and that I am certain that you bring to many. You're an amazing and wonderful and vital woman. Happy International Women's Day and every day.
Oh, well, I think I'm on the verge of tears now.
Yeah.
That is a beautiful message. Well, I think that also gets to the heart of us as educators. And I'm an educator. I've been in the university system over 30 years. And one of the things we can do as educators is promote exactly what you're talking about. And this caller coming in with that message has
just anonymous.
Illuminated that. I'm trying to think of who it is, of course, Rochelle, in all those years, who that was. But I'm delighted to hear that feedback. I've always taken that role very seriously, though. And one of my areas, of course, is women's history and gender history. And through my role in that.
Because that's how we create long-term change too.
Well, it is.
Because when we go back on the history books and we read, we need to see we need to see it through the lens of a woman who's looked at women's lives differently.
Exactly. And through students and younger people at university and in other contexts, we can work really effectively to pass on that message. And that's a very inspiring thought, and I'm very grateful you've made my day. terrific.
Yeah, Joy is actually my PhD supervisor, and that's why I'm here today. But I want to talk about, you know, the women. Like, I was last night at Professional Migrant Women's in the Victorian Women's Center, and that was really quite significant for them to have a day to celebrate and to kind of talk about and share things about.
So we can't poo-poo days, right? Because it's very easy to roll our eyes now at International Women's Day. But I think the key word is international. We forget that this is a global day, and that the privileges that we have here in Australia, in Victoria, in Melbourne, are very, very different to the privileges that women may or may not have in other countries.
Yes. As long as we have vote and as long as we have voice, we need to activate. And a woman's life is a revolution. You must believe that.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour
on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
And on a day where I am quite often cynical, I'm actually changing my mind due to the panel that is here in front of me and starting to recognise how we need to look at International Women's Day. Why is it important? How can it be significant? And yes, we know that it needs to be more than just one day, but that's our role as women, right? To take that on and to carry that into our everyday lives. Professor Joy DeMussy is with you. Viv Nguyen is as well with you this morning. She is the chairperson of the Victoria Multicultural Commission, and R. Nguyen Austin. Let's have a chat to Alan, who has been listening.
I'd just like to share a lovely little story about my beautiful mum, who came out to Australia in 1952, and she was engaged to my dad at the time. They both lived in Holland. Mm-hmm. And my dad had come out to Australia in 1950, and it took him the 2 years to earn enough money to pay for Mum's passage to come out.
Wow.
But the interesting part of their story is that because they weren't married, Mum had to marry, and she was married by proxy while she was on the ship.
That's incredible.
That is.
And that distance is quite common too, Alan Joy. Is that something that when you look at your research of migrant women and their role, quite often there would be years and years, like Alan's parents' story, years of separation?
Mm. Oh, absolutely, Rochelle. And thank you, Alan, for sharing that wonderful story. It's great to hear it. Well, the war generation in particular, we call them the war generation, who migrated here after 1945, had experienced enormous separation trauma, as we've said, and of all wars, actually, later on in the Vietnam War, of course, that both Viv and I know so much about. But separation is part of experiencing war, and for many, many couples, that defined many years of their sort of relationship. The question of proxy as well, proxy marriages, I mean, that too has an enormous history, of course, and those of you who know my work, my background is Greek, and my parents came out after the war from Greece, and marriages and proxy marriages were quite common in of that generation. Mm. To some extent, it's a byproduct of the war, with men having, the numbers of men declining and fewer men and so on. But also the whole migration story, that coming out here and that marriage would be by proxy. So that's a really interesting story as well in relation to migrant women and how they've navigated that. I'll put it like that. Mm. They were great success stories, other times they weren't.
Mm. Alan, thanks so much for sharing your story today. We really appreciate it.
And thank you for letting me share that story with you all.
This text, 66 years ago today, my mum, aged 24, arrived at Station Pier with me, aged 4, and my brother, aged 18 months. My dad came over just after my brother's birth. She left her family, her community, and everything she knew. She had minimal schooling due to the disruption of war and the aftermath. No language, no family support, no knowledge of the country that they had come to. How brave of her. She worked side by side with my dad to make a home and a future for us. She taught herself how to speak and how to read English. A strong, wise and inspiring woman, truly one to be honoured on this International Women's Day. 66 years ago today. Viv, these stories, like, they are so emotional. The idea of, well, okay, new country, now I need to teach myself to read, I need to teach myself the language, I need to teach myself the culture. Is that changing? Access to education, to community, to certain freedoms that we all take for granted.
It's interesting you ask me that question, Rochelle, because the VMC, the Victoria Multicultural Commission, just recently did a 40-year research of the establishment of the commission. And some of the words that were in the legislation in 1983 compared to what's in the current legislation on multicultural affairs are not very different. Mm-hmm. Are not very different. Yes, we have made progress, but I think the successive ways of migrant and the point that I've made is previously around how much of the lessons of the past that we know, learn, and can embed into the structures and into the system is an ongoing, I would say, an evolutionary approach. And we need to do more of that. And the way that I see that we could expedite that change is about that representation, is about that recognition, like what you are doing today, amplifying the voices of migrant and refugee women.
Alan's call from Dandenong. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
What did you want to share?
Just a story about my mum, a migrant woman coming all the way from Turkey. Now, mum was married at 14, and they had to lift her age to 16 so she could legally get married in Australia. By the time mum was 24, mum had had 7 children.
Wow.
And she had a hard. She never made contact with her family in Turkey from the time she got to Australia. And then at age, I think mum would have been probably 29, 30, she met my stepfather. And the stepfather at 27 took responsibility, and that's why I say sometimes there are good men out there, mm-hmm. took responsibility of all us 7 children. And at the age of 42, mum said that he had done such a great job of raising us that she wanted to have one more child just for him. She endured 4 miscarriages, 1 stillborn, and still she wanted to have that child. And I'm getting emotional because she went through a lot. The doctor said it wasn't possible because her womb was non-existent. And then after much consultation, they said, right, we'll get you pregnant. You've got to sit in a hospital bed for 9 months, and then hopefully you'll have a child. And that's what mum did, and she had her 8th child.
Wow. What did your mum mean to you, Alan?
She was so strong. She couldn't read, couldn't write. When Dad left us and off, we had no family, we had nothing, and mum raised us, and the values that she instilled in us, and still, even though mum's passed, we carry those values today and onto our children. She always believed that no matter how poor you are, you should always conduct yourselves in the best possible manner. And no matter where we went, we would always, and I mean, and it's just, you know, you talk of strong women, and I feel that she didn't have the education like we have today, but those values that were in her, I just look at her strength.
Oh, I'm so glad you got the chance to celebrate your mum on air, Aunt.
Yeah, I wanted to pick up that conversation. It's so important to highlight education and the situation of marriage. So in contemporary history now, a lot of what you see is that education does not necessarily protect you from economic demise. At that Professional Women's Network meeting, you saw women who were excellent tax accountants in Japan afraid that they had an accent, and so they won't go for a position until they learn enough English. My mother was told, you don't have enough English, from my father, to open your own business. And it's these things that you're told. But then you look at migrant women from India who are extremely educated, and it's the same with migrant men. You come in and then you become a taxi driver. So all these professional women...
Yeah. There's a text on this. It says, I'm a migrant woman from India. I came to Australia in 2016. I used to work as an assistant professor in education, a dance instructor, a theatre artist in India. When I came to Australia, I felt lost due to lack of communication in the English language. Slowly, I overcome these challenges, and today I'm confident and strong enough, and I'm here and working as an educator. But so often, like it doesn't end like that text, that your skills, that your qualifications, that your education is recognised. Why is that? Does that fundamentally come down to racism?
Well, there is an element of that, if you ask me. But also, I think the recognition, but also to some extent the unwillingness to expedite the change. I think if we look at the two historians we have in the room today, there is enough evidence-based research, there's enough case studies, there is enough all of this. what we struggle to understand is why that change cannot take place and cannot take place fast enough.
Is it because we expect women to be able to find the services, find the education portals, whatever it may be? Are we not bringing opportunities to women? Are we expecting women to find those opportunities?
I think it's money. Women don't have access to money, and money is choice and freedom. So that's why we work so hard on economic empowerment. You know, we just had this seminar on economic abuse. And so with those migrant marriages and coming in, and when you become a single mother, like his mother that was mentioned, and you have no means to even escape a difficult situation, and you have to raise your own children. And I've been a single mother. I went to the top schools. I was a Harvard grad, and I came and I had to take lesser positions just to get in. And that's what I mean, that, you know, you need to kind of pull up and take gumption. Women have gumption. And it also requires an economic systematic change. Those remuneration packages and schemes in corporations, the way you co-share CEO positions, like these are all practical things that the men in power can change.
Does it come down to quotas? Does it come down, how do we create that change? Because, God, we're getting tired of having this conversation, aren't we? Like, don't you feel like sometimes we're like, oh my God, we're still having to beat this drum around why we need change.
Rochelle, I was just going to add to what Viv and Arne was so eloquently saying there in terms of racism, I think sexism, if I can use that term.
Of course you can.
But also multilingualism. And I think Australia struggles on this. Multilingualism is something that we do not embrace to the extent that we should.
In what way?
Well, I think in the examples that we've heard today, many of the women that we've heard from and talked about have got more than one language, right?
Yep.
And they can speak, many of them, fluently in a range of languages. Do we celebrate that? Do we embrace that? Do we incorporate that? And I think that is also the problem. We should be embracing exactly the skill set, knowledge, expertise of your last caller there from India, because we are a very, very diverse, very multicultural society, but multilingualism is not something we celebrate.
It seems ridiculous. What I would give to be able to speak multiple languages.
It is a great skill.
Jealous.
It's a great skill and it's a great asset. But in Australia, it's not often seen that way. It's seen as an issue. So,
Viv, can that change? In terms of what corporations, right, let's talk about big business and what they should be offering as a big business, whether it be a telco or whoever, in terms of who they represent, you know, who their customers are, having someone that is multilingual should be go to the top of the list.
It should, but it doesn't happen. I am, on the record, a big fan of Target. I do believe the structure does need to change. Accountability needs to be held. You know, CEOs, senior executives all have this thing called balance scorecard. Put in there the KPIs that they have to be measured, to be held account to, and then we can change. We can't just leave it to, you've only been here for 10, I've been here for 30, well, you need to take a number, then, eventually.
So what are they doing differently?
I think they need to be held to account. Set clear KPIs. Have targets. Why not? Absolutely. I really believe that some of these measures have to be put into practice. And you just can't say, I've done that and I've employed these people and it didn't work. You actually have to make sure that you are held to account.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
My name's Rochelle Hunt, and with you in the studio this morning, Professor Joy DeMoussy, who is the Dean of Arts, Director of the Institute for Humanities and Social Services of the Australian Catholic University. Vivian, also known as Viv Nguyen, who is the chairperson of the Victorian Multicultural Commission. Arne Nguyen Austin, refugee and migrant advocate. and researcher for Melbourne Museum and ACU. And a warm welcome to our panel who has just joined us, Leila Karidi, who is a multidisciplinary curator whose work focuses on the story of migrant and refugee women. Leila, happy International Women's Day.
Happy International Women's Day.
And a warm welcome to today's conversation. You have worked tirelessly over the years, and you were a former curator for Multicultural Arts Victoria. And I guess you were on a mission at the time to share Australian and women's migration stories. As a woman of an Italian heritage, why is it important to share those stories?
Well, it's a national disgrace at the level that immigrant and refugee women, immigrants in general, but women in particular, are being excluded. If you go through the annals of Australian history, where do you find us? Very little, apart from Dr. Damusi and others like her. Where do you find us? We're absent. We're the workers. We get blamed. we get accused. But our successes, our achievements, our jumping puddles moment, if you like, doesn't exist within Australian literature. Well, literature a little bit now, it's a bit softer, but within the overall Australian history connections.
I know that you'd said in the past that if you went out on the street and you didn't speak English, then you didn't speak at all.
Absolutely. That's how it was in the days of assimilation in country Victoria.
I mean, you're all still nodding. Please tell me that has changed.
I wouldn't say it's changed, but I did want to offer that the Museum of Victoria has a migrant women activist collection. And so I encourage you to really understand your local history and so much that people have shared. So this is the change to share those stories.
Annie in Burwood says, thank you so much for honouring migrant women today. My mum was one, a 10-pound POM who went through a lot but always stayed stoic and strong for her family. There was this constant running theme of strength, stoicism, there for their family, putting everything about themselves second. Is that taken for granted, that there was expected to just be this unbelievable level of strength that women were to show and to display as migrant women, more so than any other women in our community?
Well, I think you could look at culture and expectations that cultural groups bring. And at that time, and I'm talking about the 50s onwards and perhaps the assimilation period, the expectation that it would be women who would run the household, women who would take on the domestic duties, and, you know, pull through, move through any challenges. That often comes from a cultural context, and certainly the culture that I've written about, which is the Greek culture, that there was an expectation definitely at that period. I mean, I think it obviously has changed over the decades, but, you know, whether it's more implicit now rather than explicit might be a question we can think about. I think it's still there.
Brian's in Burrell, I think, calling us from New South Wales. Good morning, Brian.
That's right, from Burrell in New South Wales.
Oh, good morning. What did you want to share?
Good morning. Yeah, look, my mother had an interesting start in Australia. She emigrated from Malta in 63 and with three kids, and ended up having, seven kids and seven kids in 5 years, two sets of twins.
Oh, my goodness.
And she trained as a teacher in Malta, then retrained when she came to Australia, and spoke three languages, could read and write Latin very well. And, she experienced the whole gamut of everything from prejudice through to, being loved by the local school, and she's just a great woman, and did a lot in her community, did a lot for her family, and became a bit of a celebrity in Coburg, where she lived.
In Coburg, did you say?
You couldn't go to the Vic Market without being pulled up by people. And look, even in her 80s, when she was quite old, people would follow us down the you know, down some of the aisles in the supermarkets, and would eventually say, "Is that you, Mrs. Tanty?
What was her name, Brian?
Nancy Tanty.
I'm sure we'll get people texting in now saying that they know Nancy, absolutely. Oh, Brian, I'm so glad you were able to reminisce about your mum and to share Nancy's story. Layla, why is it important for you to make sure that these women's stories are told? What made you want to do this type of work?
Well, as I said earlier, one is the absence. The other is that if we are to truly tell the story of Australia, you can't tell the story of Australia without, of course, the First People up the top, but you could not tell the story of Australia unless mm-hmm. you take on board the mass, in particular, the mass migration that made Australia what it is. I mean, for better or for worse, Australia is changing through mass migration. Wherever we came from, whether we came from the African states, whether we came from Southern Europe after Second World War, wherever we came from, we certainly have changed the country.
And for the better, absolutely. I mean, Brian talking about Nancy and being pretty much a minor superhero of Coburg. Viv, when we talk about communities, right, so there's International Women's Day. It's a huge international day. It is a day to recognise the achievements and also to recognise how far we need to come for women all around the globe. But when we bring that down to a micro level of the community that we live in, we all have the Nancys in our life, the women that are in the community that make it better. You know, and it's because of their attitude or the way that they share their knowledge, the interaction that maybe they have with their community. How important are these women, are the Nancys, for all of our suburbs and towns like Bendigo? I know, well, Layla, you've spent a lot of time.
I think if these women that you refer to, Rochelle, were to stop, I think the whole society will stop. Because they do so much, whether it be volunteering, cleaning the church, the synagogue, the mosque, the temple, right through to actually running an organization, literally making sure that the organization continues regardless whether or not they receive funding or not. And they are the backbone of our civic society, of the community service, the unsung heroes that we don't often see. You've given me an opportunity to talk about the Victorian Multicultural Commission's Cultural Diversity Week, which to this year's theme is about our shared stories and celebrating together. And that is so important because we all have our own unique stories and we need to create and foster more platforms and opportunities, whether it be in the history, in the stories, in the economics,
in
the arts. Those platforms need to be far more available than they are today. And I know we are making progress, but I think there is a lot more that we can do.
I told you someone would know Nancy. My mum taught with Nancy at Coburg Primary. That's from Sally in Melbourne.
Can I confirm what Vivian has just shared with us and to say that my most recent experience has indeed been with women that fit that description from Dandenong. The city of Greater Dandenong is known as the second biggest city with residents of cultural diversity. So when you say multicultural, that's a different dimension. I won't say multicultural, but the most diverse city in Australia. And there are 10 women who overcame every obstacle that was thrown their way. And not only they improved their life, not only they created opportunities for themselves, but extended themselves. They made the most amazing contributions, community contributions, throughout the southern eastern region. And that's been one of the most significant periods of my life, my working life.
Yeah, and I just want to share about rural women, migrant women and refugees in the rural. I work with a group called Rural Australians for Refugees, and we've just built a program for women to tell their own stories. Uh-huh. It's a writing retreat in Aries Inlet for migrant and refugee women, and connecting them with local writers, connecting them with the land and the activism there, And I just want people to acknowledge that, you know, migrant women are all over, and it's not just a cosmopolitan. It's in the rural, and we need to bring those voices and stories ahead too.
How important, like, you've touched on something there. We've had a few texts saying, you know, I've had the privilege of being able to speak to my mother or my grandmother or even working in palliative care and being able to document these women's stories. Mm. How important is it to write it down, Joy?
Definitely. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you want this to be passed down to next generations, to future researchers. Documenting the stories is vital, as we're all saying, to our history and to understanding generations of women who've passed and their experiences, because too often, invariably, those experiences are not documented anywhere else. It's through the oral history and through talking to them that you can bring that story to the page and then passed on. I think it's incredibly illuminating and very important that we keep the historical records intact.
And I know Anu touched on factory work before, and Joy, that's something that you've looked into too. Mm. And that's another area, and in particular the textile industry here in Melbourne and in parts of regional Victoria. But the role of women working within factories and us, not really recognising the significance of the work itself, period, let alone the fact that women were doing it during different periods of war. They took up the jobs of men. Mm. But without all of those women working within those factories, potentially not getting paid properly, not getting treated properly, and still raising families, our society and our economic society just would have come to a grinding halt.
Absolutely. In the mid-70s, there was a great report that, that some of your listeners and others might remember. It's called I Wouldn't Want My Wife to Work There. And it was a study of migrant women and their contribution to the textile industry and other industries in Australia and their factory work and the appalling conditions that they worked under, not unionised, and the unions was quite disengaged at this point with women workers in the factory system. That's changed, obviously. You forget that this was a different Australia in the 50s and 60s, when often some of these workers were seen as a threat to other Australian workers. They were poorly paid, they were not unionised, the conditions were atrocious. And I think these stories need to be documented, obviously, and remembered. And International Women's Day is a great forum to have these discussions and talk about these things. My question is, can we ever envisage a time when we don't need International Women's Day?
I know. Unfortunately, I don't think so. And even if, let's say, best case scenario, there was equality across everything, you'd need it for history's point, wouldn't you?
Well, I can't. I mean, I raise that question because I think it is a pertinent one to ask on this day. And, you know, don't get me wrong, this is a fantastic day. It's a monumental day. And there are very few days that are dedicated to discussing women's issues like this. Yeah. And I think, and globally, as we're saying, and I think we need to do it, you know, consistently. And as we've rightly said, I mean, I believe in targets as well. And I think it's a great opportunity to advocate and push. Mm. And raising that question in that way, will there ever be a time when we don't need it? Really,
How do you feel about International Women's Day? How do you feel about the day in general? Come on, be honest.
It's been the foundation. Sorry, go on.
I think it's really important. And I don't think that I will, not in my lifetime, Professor Joy, that we won't need International Women's Day. It is an opportunity for, I see so many organisations, the multicultural communities, leveraging on the day to really put the spotlight on issues of importance, family violence, significant issue, education, mental health, homelessness.
You don't think it's been just taken over by corporates? You know, my inbox is full.
I don't see that in my world, unfortunately. Or fortunately for me, I see all of these activities that the multicultural communities highlight using this day.
So I'm working on post-traumatic growth with colleagues. And focusing on economic validation and recognition for women. And we look at, you know, developing women in small business. So we talk about working from home. Mm. You know, my mother had the sewing machine there working from home, you know, and now men can work from home and share in the domestic labor. and that frees up.
This makes sure you still get things like superannuation, right?
Correct.
Working from home, but properly.
Working from home doesn't mean that, you know, people can short you on pay. Mm. I think deep validation is needed for women, for themselves, and then recognition. Show me the money. That is what I'm about.
Layla, how do you feel about International Women's Day?
International Women's Day was the foundation of my awareness raising in feminism, so I'm very attached to it. Can we do without it? Can you see patriarchy disappearing in the next generation? No, I can't. Can you see capitalism disappearing in the next generation? No, I can't. So we really need to re-energize, bring along the next generation and the next generation to maintain the momentum, keep it alive, energize it, refresh it. But we do need a presence and we do need a voice.
I'm not going to ask you your age, Layla, because that would be rude of me, but...
Well, I'll tell you, how about if I tell you that I am shaped by the Second World War? So everything that happens on a day-to-day basis in my life goes back to those experiences, which there's no time.
So when we talk about generational change, have you witnessed it? Have you seen significant moments where you feel... You are still fighting the fight now, and thank God for that, but have you... Are there moments, key moments, where you've gone, okay, we're getting somewhere?
Depends where you live.
Yeah.
If you live in the Mallee, where I lived for a while, and I was there recently, you would think you were back in the 50s.
Yeah, I've got family in the Mallee. Yeah.
So it depends. A lot depends with the socialisation, with the level of education. Like the women that I recently worked with through Wellsprings for Women in Dandenong, they all came with tertiary education, with tertiary qualification from overseas. And when they got here, those qualifications were totally unrecognised. As was mentioned earlier in by the panel. So it's about reshaping your life, reworking your life to start again, you know, every step of the way.
I can't even imagine having to do that. Like, I mean, it's hard enough to do it the first time, right? And then they say, by the way, you've got to do it again and in a different country and in a different language. Good luck with that. Like, it seems ridiculous.
So imagine that. Do you know?
Yeah, I can't. I just, this message here, it says, I'm getting goosebumps whilst listening to this program. I'm a migrant from Mumbai, India, and I run a not-for-profit organisation promoting local talents in performing arts. And for the past 6 years, without any funding, no sponsor model, but enjoying every moment of it, as it gives a platform to many women and men of all ages, of all different walks of life. This acknowledgement matters so much.
Get in touch with Friends of Refugees in Springvale.
I love it. And we know. So your latest project is called Know My Story. But this is important. And Viv, I'll put this back to you as well. You know, as the chairperson of Victoria's Multicultural Commission, what I always find, and I say this so often, but it never grows tired for me, is where I see the most change, it happens from the community. It happens from the inside out. It never happens from the top down. It happens from the grassroots up.
And you are right. There is so much empowerment. There is so much activity on the ground at the grassroots level. And that is why I thoroughly am feeling privileged in this role, because you can see so much happening in the communities. And a large part of it isn't funded. I'd say to the governments, the return on investment on the activities that they fund, the multicultural and multi-faith communities, is tenfold at least. The volunteering that goes into it, and it's just not the labour volunteering, it's the expertise, the specialists. Just last night I was at the Multicultural Women's Alliance for Family Violence. The experts, the specialists, the doctors, the professors, they were all there volunteering to make sure that the issue of domestic and gendered violence is known in the community and raise the awareness, get more men on board to drive change with them. It is stunning in the communities.
Community, that's where the change happens, Anne.
Yeah, and also on an individual level, you know, a woman has to pay herself first. You have got to take care of yourself. There is no breakdown time. And I just believe that you should really think about yourself as central to the structure of community. You know, your family is the beginning and then everything else, you know, and that's why we need the support of men and to hold that whole structure mm-hmm. up. If we're going to continue to live in a man's world, we have to acknowledge that why don't men give up half of the sky and give up half of their pay? And why don't you just share it with someone else? And then you can go golfing and go visit your dying father so you don't regret that you never had a life or you didn't spend enough time with your children. You know, just share the labor and the money so that you can have the freedom to actually, you know, live a life.
The documentation is so important, and we can't all be professors like of history, Joy, like yourself, but we can all document our own families or our own friend's story. It might be a neighbour, you know, it might be an auntie or someone, but to get those stories down so that over history our voices are heard.
If we can have one take-home, many take-home messages, but one important one is document those stories. The ones we've heard today from many of your callers and those who've written in, they are vital. They are so crucial. Don't believe or think for a moment they're insignificant or no one else will be interested. We're all interested. We're fascinated. And it all, you know, contributes to the collective understanding of what it has meant and continues to mean to be a migrant woman in Australia.
Happy International Women's Day to all of you. Thank you so much for joining us today, for sharing your knowledge, your expertise, and for your life's work and for your dedication to ensuring that women have a voice and that we will have a place in history. Professor Joy DeMussy, AM, Dean of Arts, Director of the Institute for Humanities and Social Sciences at the Australian Catholic University. Thank you. Vivian, of course, Viv Nguyen, who is chairperson of the Victorian Multicultural Commission. Thank you. May your tenure stay in there year after year because we need you in there. Anne Nguyen Austin as well, refugee and migrant advocate and researcher for the Melbourne Museum and ACU. And Leila Kadridjeri, who is a curator whose work focuses on the stories of migrant women. Your latest project is called Know My Story. Thank you so much for sharing your story, for your life's work, Leila, and also too for sharing the story of Bendigo and the Mallee, which is very close to my heart as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Can I also add that funding is critical to be able to do this? And Wellsprings for Women were able to do it through a grant from the Public Records Office. So
money. We need more money. Well said, Leila.
Thanks, Rochelle.
My name's Rochelle Hunt. This is The Conversation Hour. Don't forget The Conversation Hour. It's also a podcast, so we've got lots of different topics. In particular, if you want to look at things through a women's lens, we've got stories on that. But we've got stories on everything from clinical trials to understanding the environment that we work in. Happy International Women's Day. I'll be back with you on Tuesday. Take care. Stay safe.